If you looked at the little card in your bulletin insert to give away, that's not for you to keep, it's to give away, remember, to someone. And some of our other materials, you'll notice that our theme for Advent is This Little Light of Mine. And I know you know the song, right? This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Well, you know, this fits really well with what we say is our vision, because we say that we are called to be the loving light of Christ, connecting people to God and to each other so that God can transform all of our lives. So to do that, we have to change the song just a little bit, because you see, it's not my little light that's shining. It's God's great light that's shining through me and you. Jonathan Carl last week, near the end of his sermon, provided an image that I would like to begin with today. He said, the loving light of Christ won't be shared unless it flows through the ambient lens of you and me. That's how it gets shared. So this little light that we share, that is not ours, but if it isn't conducted through the ambient lens of us, people may not see it. Now, angels are those folks who are supposed to be conduits of God's light and love. They're messengers of God, right? And as I said before, we have this stereotypical image of an angel. Some of them are little cherubic angels, little chubby babies, you know, with wings, and others are people in long robes like this and with halos and wings. But in the ancient world, that was not really the case. Zechariah and Elizabeth are both from priestly families. That means they're part of the aristocracy in Judea. Because he's from a priestly family, every now and again he has to go and serve at the temple. And that's chosen by lot, by chance. Although in the ancient world it was not considered chance. When you were chosen by lot, you were chosen by God. So Zechariah was chosen by God to serve at the temple during a particular time. He was chosen to go into an enclosed room that had the altar of incense to make sure the incense was burning and smoking. The room was filled with the smoke of the incense, because in that day and time, the smoke rising from the incense signified our prayers rising to God. It was a very important role. So important that he was the only one who was supposed to be in that room. Only the priest was to be there. He's doing his work. He's making sure that everything is filled with smoke. This room filled with smoke, to any Jewish listener, would have reminded them of Isaiah. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up, and there too the room was filled with smoke. There too, there was an encounter with seraphim and cherubim, who are frightening creatures. They are not sweet creatures at all. As he's doing his work, suddenly a figure appears out of the smoke. Well, thinking he's alone, not knowing who in the world could be hidden there or what their intentions are, do they mean to rob him? Do they mean to kill him? Of course, he's terrified. He is absolutely terrified that someone else is in the room and approaching him out of the smoke of the incense. And so the first thing that the angel, who apparently looks like pretty much anybody else, says is, hey, don't be afraid. It's good news that I have for you. I'm not going to hurt you. I've come to tell you what God has planned for you. You and Elizabeth are going to have a child. Now, Zechariah and Elizabeth had had no children. And it's interesting that in this story, Luke says that they were righteous people. They were observant Jews. They had kept all the commandments. There was absolutely no reason that she should be barren, although when women could not have children in that day and time, the disgrace fell on the woman, not the man. But Luke makes it very clear that she's done nothing at all that would justify her not having a child. Now, they're old by this time. I mean, good grief, they may be 40. Okay? I mean, when you start marrying at 12 and 13 and having kids, by the time you get to 40, you're ancient. Okay? I guess I identify a bit with Zechariah. You know, an old priest in a long robe, although I'm way past 40, with a beard, an older parent. He hears this news, and the angel says, not only will you have a child, but this child has been chosen by God for a special purpose. This child will drink no alcohol, because this child from before birth will be drunk on the Holy Spirit. And when he's drunk on the Holy Spirit, we do not want people to get confused. His job is to turn the hearts of children back to their parents, turn the hearts of people who have turned away from God back to God, to prepare people for the Messiah who is here any day, any time. That will be his job. You will name him John, although he'll be very much like Elijah. He will be named John. And I know that nobody in your family is named John, but don't let that bother you. That's his name, chosen by God. Zechariah is still a bit shaken by all this, obviously, because he says, now, how am I supposed to believe you? How am I supposed to know this is going to happen? It's kind of like somebody giving you medical advice and you say, why should I trust you? They say, well, I'm a doctor. Or legal advice, why should I trust you? Well, I'm an attorney. Counsel, well, why should I trust you? Well, I'm a licensed counselor. So what the angel does is he provides his certification, his credentials. He says, I am Gabriel. That name immediately would indicate that this was a messenger of God. There were typical names assigned to the angels of that time, messengers of God, Gabriel being one of them. So he offers his credential, says, you can believe me, I'm Gabriel, but because you didn't, you are going to be unable to speak until everything that I've told you has happened. Now, when he comes out, when Zechariah comes out, it's pretty clear to everybody that something has happened. He can't speak, so he's gesturing to try to tell them things, and they realized he's had a vision of some kind. What they don't realize that he does is that he's not going to be able to speak for the rest of his time of service at the temple until they conceive a child, and then for the 9 months that they will wait for the birth of that child. We don't know how long, how many months he was unable to speak. Which, though it was a problem for him, may have been a gift to Elizabeth. I know it would be around our house if the power of speech were taken away from me for a few months. Margaret would probably celebrate, actually. But the thing about it is, because he could not speak, he was forced to listen. The first thing I want to talk to you about in this Advent, on this second Sunday of Advent, is that we are called to listen. I know we talk about watching and waiting, and that's important too. But listening is not something we're very good at doing. I don't know about you, but often when I'm in conversation with somebody, I'm acting like I'm listening. I'm smiling and I'm nodding, and the whole time I'm forming what I'm going to say in return. Okay? I'm not really listening. I'm going to suggest to you that listening, the way Zechariah had to do it, was a discipline. First of all, We have to keep our mouths shut. We have to be quiet. Now, Zechariah had some help with that, obviously. We don't, but we can choose. We can listen without judgment, without feeling the need to console necessarily, to simply be a presence that can open up and hear the other person share whatever it is they need to share. Sometimes those are words of hurt. Sometimes those are words of joy. Sometimes those are words of anger. But simply to listen and receive those, that is a discipline, and it's a very difficult discipline, it seems to me. Secondly, I think listening is an art form as well. Several weeks ago, I mentioned the rule of Saint Benedict, written 1,500 years ago, but I think just as fresh and applicable today as it was then in many ways. It began with the word listen. I mentioned that. But it continues. The first sentence of the rule is, listen with the ear of the heart. That's a different kind of listening. That's a deeper kind of listening. It's not just listening to the words that are said. It's listening to what is unsaid. It's listening to that current of feeling that moves under and around and above those words. In theater, we call that subtext. When you're preparing a character, you read the words, but sometimes characters don't say what they mean. And even when they do say what they mean, you have to hunt sometime for the emotion that flows under that, that flows around it. To listen with the ear of the heart means to listen in a deep way. To listen in a way that opens you up to that other person. I don't know about you, but we as pastors often have people come to us to open their hearts. My guess is, as followers of Jesus, you have people come to you to open their hearts occasionally. And often they don't want answers. They want someone to listen. They don't necessarily want solutions. They want to be heard, really heard. That's listening with the ear of the heart, and it's an art form. It really is. Finally, I think listening is an act of love. Now, I didn't coin that phrase. This comes from a StoryCorps. You may be familiar with that on public radio. Dave Isay put together little booths around the country, and people could go in and interview friends, family members. Just ask them questions. Just talk. Let them tell their story. Sometimes people who had lived together for 40 years or known each other all of their lives learned things they had never heard before. Because you see, listening with the ear of the heart is an act of love. They collected some of these and published them under that title. If we are to share the loving light of Christ, if we are to be that ambient lens, one of the ways that we open for the light to flow through is by listening, by taking time to be quiet, to set the judgment aside, to let go of the need to prepare our rebuttal. Because you see, we are called to do that kind of listening not just to the people we love and agree with. We are called to do that especially with the people with whom we may have profound disagreements, with those people we may not even like to be around, with those people who have no one else to listen to them because no one else is interested, or like the angel, they frighten people when they approach. That's the kind of listening that we are called to do this Advent as part of our preparation, as part of our listening. When we do that, we become transparent to the light of God, which is our calling, after all. To simply let God's love shine through us in such a way that others can experience it, especially those who may have been told they are unlovable, who may have been told they don't belong, who may have been told that everybody else can be forgiven but they can't, who may have felt as if they have been pushed away. That is our calling, not just in Advent, but at all times and in all places. So, my friends, if we haven't, let's begin today to listen with the ear of the heart. Thanks be to God.